descending from atop the highest mountains of pop culture and delivering the knowledge of media you seek. This is the Geek Peek Podcast. Descending from atop the highest mountains of pop culture and delivering the knowledge of media you seek.
Welcome back to another episode of the Geek Peek. I'm your host, Chris Melvin, and thanks for joining us this week. At the Geek Peek, we take you to the summit of a powerful pop cultural nexus of all things geek. Whether it's the hottest new video game, that amazing new series you might be sleeping on, a movie you might be on the fence about seeing, your next adult beverage selection, or a track that you missed that absolutely jams, the boys at the Geek Peek got you covered. I'd like to welcome my co-hosts, Trent Sherrod and Brandon Lanis. How are you fellas doing this week?
How is it going, my dude? I'm doing wonderful. Glad to be talking to you guys again. I mean, we talked throughout the week anyways, but you know, glad to be back on the podcast.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. What's going on, Trent?
It's America week. I'm psyched.
Yeehaw.
I said, America, fuck yeah. So this week, we are going to be talking about America. Happy 4th of July, everybody. I know it's a bit of a different one since we're all locked up in quarantine mode, but I know we're all looking very much forward to that.
Are we though? Are we locked up?
Well, you're supposed to be, I guess.
We're in Florida. For anybody that doesn't know, we're in Florida. So yeah. You've probably seen us on the news.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, we're the problem state nowadays.
Yeah, America's redheaded stepchild. That's us. But, you know, it is what it is. I'm sure going to be having some good times, and we're wishing all of you the best. But this week, we're going to be going over three particular films that we all felt were quintessentially American. They were the quintessential American movie experience. And these three movies are Independence Day, Saving Private Ryan, and Team America World Police. So we'll each be discussing a little bit why we think that's a quintessential American movie, what we love about it, and hopefully some highlights and some fun facts that will jog some good memories for all of you. We assume most of you have seen these movies. If you haven't, crawl out of your cultural den and join the rest of us out in the sunlight.
Honestly, if you haven't seen them, what better time is there than the 4th of July to watch them, especially if you're locked up?
For real, for real. So let's go ahead and let's talk about what everyone's drinking this week. Trent, what are you drinking on? What do we got going this week?
I'm drinking some nice, smooth Basil Hayden's bourbon whiskey straight from Kentucky.
I'm so jealous. That's one of my favorite whiskeys.
I love the bottle. The bottle, anybody that hasn't drank Basil Hayden's, the bottle comes with this copper wrapping around the, I don't know how to describe it. You know what I'm talking about, right?
Oh, I know what you're talking about. It's very clean.
Yeah. It's like
it has the copper around like the wood from the barrel, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's real nice. Like if you haven't had Basil Hayden's, it's amazing.
Like, which Brandon and I were.
It looks like a premium bottle.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Brandon and I were talking before this and we both didn't realize that it's like a subsidiary of Jim Beam. So Jim Beam distills Basil Hayden.
Oh, wow. I've always been partial to Jim over Jack. I know a lot of people think that's heresy, just normal Jim Beam versus normal Jack Daniels. But Jack, Gentleman Jack is creme.
Oh, well, Gentleman Jack's something completely different.
But yes, yeah. Yes, absolutely. That's awesome. So what's the percentage on that Basil Hayden's?
40%, 80 proof.
Ooh, somebody's going to be drunk by the end of this episode.
I've already had two.
Oh, boy. Got to start the night early.
Yeah. Well, Brandon, why don't you go ahead and tell us what you're drinking on so we're not wasted before the first 10 minutes of this thing.
All right. So I was going to go with a sour to try to switch things up a little bit with my beers, but I realized that the sour beer that I picked is actually from Canada, and it just didn't feel right for the Marathon to be drinking a Canadian beer. So I chose one of my personal favorites, one of my go-tos, Rogue Dead Guy, brewed in Oregon. It's based off of a German-style Maybach, and it's made with Rogue's proprietary Pac-Man ale yeast.
Pac-Man?
Yeah, I don't know. That's what they call it, though.
I personally love Rogue Dead Guy, and you've probably seen him at bars, listeners, the keg tap is very distinct. It's like a little
it's skeleton. Like Elvis guy, right?
No, it's like a little skeleton dude, like in a fetal position, basically.
Yeah.
Oh, what's the one I'm thinking of that has, it's like the skeleton with the Elvis head?
The Elvis
got like, or it's
I'm
like
not sure
Elvis
about that
hair.
One.
Actually, you know what I'm thinking of? I don't know why I thought of this. I'm thinking, what's that Disney movie with all the skeletons? And
are you talking like about Coco?
Yes. I don't know why I thought of that.
Recuerda me.
You heard it here first. Rogue Dead Guy is the official beer of Coco.
Directly linked forever in perpetuity.
So one thing I was looking at while I was checking out this Rogue Dead Guy, just to find some interesting facts about it, because I've been drinking this beer for years, but I wanted to see what experts say when describing it. So they say it's malty, smooth, biscuity, floral, and medium bodied. So when I saw biscuity, I was like, I don't know what the hell that means. How is a beer biscuity? So I looked that up, and it means a slightly toasty, sweet breadiness akin to a biscuit.
Yes. I was about to chime in and say that, like, when I think biscuity, I think it's got like a nice bready feel to it. So I hear you on that. And I've had Rogue Dead Guys, so I know that.
I see where they're coming from, but it's just I just found it as a, I don't know, kind of a funny way to describe a beer.
Well, I think it's time for me to tell you about what I'm drinking.
I believe it is.
So I was at Total Wine just before I came here, actually. And I picked up a nice little bottle of Iron Smoke Straight Bourbon Whiskey, artisanal crafted small batch. And it's a 4-grain bourbon with apple wood smoked wheat, 80 proof. It's pretty basic looking bottle, to be honest. Small little paper label with a very light skeleton in the corner. Like, it's not central on the logo at all on the left side. And it's him smoking a pipe and it's kind of faded out.
I need to see that. What's it called again?
It's called Iron Smoke. Iron Smoke Straight Bourbon Whiskey.
Applewood wheat barley sounds fucking awesome.
Yeah, it does.
And it's small batch. So I've got here on the bottle batch 31. And it was 225.20 when they put the
bottle. Love it. I love it when they do that.
Yeah, and it's like handwritten, smudged off. So
my dream is to own a brewery or distillery or brewery/distillery one day. And that's what I've always imagined, is like having my little initials next to the date that it was bottled on there. It's so cool.
Yeah, absolutely. That I want to get like a barrel. I want to like throw in with a bunch of friends and we get a barrel of whiskey and we age it.
I want to get a barrel for my house and turn it into a whiskey cabinet.
That would be awesome.
Dear God, man. I love that. No, that sounds really cool. I need to get a bigger house to do something like that. But moving forward, I did want to throw out that you need to follow us on social media, because I like engaging with all of you beautiful people at Geek Peak Pod for Instagram and Twitter, and then facebook.com/Geek Peak Podcast. Check us out. We also put up our first video on YouTube. It's just a static image for now, with the hopes eventually that we will maybe be doing some video on, you know, live video as we are podcasting.
Yeah, I think a live video of us one day would be really cool, or even like an animated image at some point for the YouTube.
Yeah, so stay tuned on that. But we do have a channel, and that is, you just type in Geek Peak Pod.
What do you say we get to the news?
I was going to say, let's get right into it. So first off on the news section today, we've got rapper Huey shot and killed. So Huey was the guy who made the song Pop Lock It Drop It in 2006.
Pop Lock and Drop It.
Yeah.
Pop Lock and Drop It.
He was shot to death in front of a home in a Missouri neighborhood in St. Louis.
Well, that's somber. Told, the first piece of news.
Yeah. when you texted that to the group when it happened, I told my fiance, and she was devastated.
I know, it's a bummer for real.
I think we all
she immediately
danced to that song at prom.
Oh yeah, we definitely did. And she immediately knew who it was. It was not, I didn't have to say Pop Lock and Drop It. She immediately knew. I didn't know that. I didn't know. You could have given me a million shots to guess that name of the rapper that did that song. I would never have guessed.
R.I.P. Huey. Thank you for
our hearts go out to your loved ones and family.
For real. Thanks for making a banger back when we were in high school.
Indeed.
So next up, we've got Okay, so this is probably my favorite piece of news this week.
Hold on. I'm looking at this on the dock right now, and this is the biggest 180 from the news that we just
Okay, so maybe the ordering of our topics this week were not ideal.
Everybody's strap in for this one.
Okay, so the story I'm reading from the Daily Mail: sex addict sues Amazon-owned video platform Twitch for $25 million because it has too many scantily clad gamers that left him excited and he injured himself. So this guy is claiming that because there's hot women on Twitch playing games. Sorry, by the way, he's following 786 female gamers and zero male streamers.
Yeah, that's a big one. He's selectively following female streamers, like he doesn't have a choice, basically. And one of his biggest complaints is that there's no filter to make it so you can only see male streamers on the pages of the game that he chooses, which is completely ridiculous.
Yeah, that's absurd. I think that he's probably going to lose. He has filed lawsuits against other companies for similar ridiculousness against Nintendo, Microsoft, and Sony. And he's from San Francisco. They've dubbed him the PSN plaintiff.
Of course he's from San Francisco.
And he's written an autobiography, of course. And he's claiming that he hurt himself while vigorously masturbating with a pocket pussy. And like he would not stop using said pocket pussy. And he said he suffers from depression, obsessive compulsive disorder, agoraphobia, and Crohn's disease. And he is also a sex addict and blames his OCD.
Have you heard his demands for what the court do? Should they be on his side?
No.
He wants to sue Twitch for $25 million. And he wants all the streamers that he's beat his meat furiously to completely banned off the server.
Oh, America.
It's hilarious.
Oh, God, dude.
That character.
That is
lawyer, unreal. What attorney is taking this up? I'm assuming he's got to be filing a suit on him on his own.
Today's episode will be examining the worst and best of America. And you decide which is which. So moving forward, we've got, by the way, do you have any other questions about this dude hurting his penis?
I have a comment.
I've extensively researched this. I think it's hilarious.
So I didn't know about this beforehand. And when you said injured himself, I'm like, oh, did this kid get a boner and then get entangled in his headset and cut off circulation? Did he get up too quick and like smash his boner? No, because I thought it was an accident. He was like, oh, I wasn't trying to have this happen, but
no,
that is not, that is, yeah, like it was completely his own decision. That's insane. Yeah. That's literally insane. That's more insane than the woman suing McDonald's for hot coffee. That's at least 10 times more insane than that.
Oh, absolutely. We're accelerating to the most insane timeline faster and faster every year.
You guys, just quick little side note. You remember the Chili's incident where the lady had a finger in her chili? Or Wendy's.
Yeah,
no, it was Wendy's. It was the Wendy's chili incident.
I do remember that.
So you guys, I recently learned this, but that was all fake. Like there was actually a finger in there, but it was her boyfriend's coworker's finger and it accidentally got cut off on a job site. And the first thing they think of is, let's not go to the hospital and reattach this. It's, bro, let me get that. I'll put in some chili and sue Wendy's.
What is wrong with people?
Oh my God.
I mean, I shouldn't be surprised with some of the things I've seen, but my God.
What a plan.
Well, the thing is, it's so dumb because you know whoever's doing the investigation into it is going to go to every employee there and be like, yo, let me see them digits.
Yeah, true.
You get all 10 of those.
Oh my God. That's absurd. Okay, so moving forward, we got some movie news. So Jordan Peele's Candyman trailer dropped. What are your guys' reactions? I know you guys just watched this right before we started recording this.
I did. It looks incredible, honestly. The cinematography looks great. It actually has some real tension there, which I feel like the original film was good, but it just wasn't that scary. This one actually has that, I don't know, that foreboding feeling you can get from an overarching villain that's just in the background constantly hovering over the cast.
Yeah, one thing I'll say.
Go ahead, Chris.
One thing I'll say about the original Candyman that I really liked was, although it wasn't necessarily super scary, it definitely had some points that were, it was just a really interesting, compelling story to have a horror movie.
Yeah, I agree. Seven.
So I'm looking forward to Jordan Peele really putting some effort into it and making it scary on top of having a very well-crafted story.
I wonder if it's going to be similar to the original, where it's going to be almost like a twisted love story type thing, or if they're going to go a completely different way with it.
I kind of hope that they don't do that.
I hope so too.
It seems like it'll be different already because it's like a guy who's coming in and he seems like kind of a hipster and he's in a neighborhood that's very run down, but is being gentrified. And he's kind of like documenting the history of it. And then he discovers Candyman and then he starts exploring the tale. That's kind of what the setup seems like.
So I never saw the original. The only reason I even know what Candyman is every time I went to Blockbuster, I would see that cover with the bees coming out of the mouth.
Yep.
You guys know what I'm talking about?
I know exactly what you're talking about.
It was horrifying.
I would see that every single time I went to Blockbuster when I was a kid. And that just always stuck with me, that image. So I've never actually seen it. I know I probably should watch it, but I don't think I'm going to. I think I'm going to watch this remake first. And kind of go into it blind because I don't really know what the story's about.
Did you know that scene that you're referring to that actually happens in the movie, there is a person who puts live bees in their mouth?
That does yes, not
I did know
shock
that.
Me.
They use all live, like a lot of live bees in that movie.
That's awesome.
It's a pretty good.
That's some Alfred Hitchcock shit.
Yeah, right.
Oh my God. We'll have to do an episode at some point talking about some old school Alfred Hitchcock stuff.
We're gonna do an episode eventually about like all the podcasts that we love, and there's a really good series on Alfred Hitchcock that I gotta recommend to you guys. I'll watch anything that Jordan Peele puts out. In my opinion, his, I don't want to say worst, but his not so great material is the remake of The Twilight Zone. There were some episodes in there that were all right, but even despite that, I'll watch anything that he puts out.
I'm hoping season two of The Twilight Zone will be good. They've been announced.
I wish it wasn't
lately. So
I wish it wasn't an NBC show, or they got a little bit darker with it. Like if that was on HBO Max or something.
Yep, I completely agree. I feel like they'd be a lot more subdued because they're on NBC.
Yeah, they're tied down by the network standards for sure.
Yeah.
Okay, so moving forward, we just heard this today: Fallout TV show announced on Amazon. By the creators of Westworld, Lisa Joy and Jonah Nolan. Whoa, where did that
I am come from? Very excited about that. I don't know if it's even going to be good or not, but I just want to see what it looks like on film.
I was getting chastised by the boys earlier because I've never played Fallout.
Yeah, Trent's like, I'm going to beat Jack and Daxter for like the 17th time. I've never played Red Dead or Fallout.
Okay. Open up Red Dead 2, you bastard.
In my defense, I have Red Dead 2. I got it for Christmas. Was it last year or 2 years ago?
It's been almost 2 years now.
Oh, God. So it was two Christmases ago I got it.
Step it up.
I have not opened the package yet, partially because I was broke at the time and I couldn't afford an external hard drive for my PlayStation. So I didn't download it because it comes with two discs. But...
Man, that's, you got to play that game.
That's my excuse.
All right, so Fallout TV show, though. I think that'll be interesting. Amazon's got some heavy hitters that they're coming out with moving forward. I'm excited to see what they do with the Lord of the Rings series. But I was talking with the guys prior to this episode. I hate The Boys. I think it's stupid. I hate Good Omens. I think it's stupid. Man in the High Tower first season wasn't good. There's so many Amazon shows that have the potential to be good and then are very mediocre. Marvelous Mrs. Maisel is the exception to the rule, in my opinion. But
see, I don't like that show.
I think it's hilarious, but that's me personally. Like I said,
I'll also say Trent, in my opinion about The Boys, does not flow with Chris's.
Oh yeah, no, Chris. We understand it's okay to be wrong sometimes.
Yeah.
Yes, exactly. So we'll keep an eye on the Amazon shows. I don't know.
I hope with the Fallout TV show they go pretty in depth with Vault Tech and how sinister and fucked up they are by like taking the test subjects that are the vault dwellers and putting them up against like weird different trials.
That'll be interesting if they do that, but I'm just hesitant purely because it's the people from Westworld, and I felt like the third season fell short of my expectations upon rewatching. And that combined with Amazon being the network that's hosting it, I'm just skeptical. Also, if they make it about Fallout 76, I'll definitely watch it.
I don't think they will.
Not about the actual game, just like a documentary about it, about how bad it is. Anyways, moving forward, did you guys hear Chuck E. Cheese went bankrupt?
That's horrible news.
Well, I wonder why they would go bankrupt.
You saying children don't like arcade games and playgrounds anymore?
No, just that's a straight up house of disease.
Yeah, after COVID closures.
Do we know if they were struggling before COVID, like pre-COVID? I'm guessing they probably were, but
I feel like they must have been if they're going bankrupt.
I mean,
it's only been a few months, so.
The theme of the restaurant is an animatronic pizza slinging rat.
Do you guys remember that scene in the Goofy movie where Goofy takes Max to this like redneck trailer trash? It's like an animatronic play with a bunch of possums that are playing the banjo and everything, and that's just what that reminded me of.
Yeah, so that's kind of sad news. I don't know. I like Chuck E. Cheese as a kid.
Oh, I loved it when I was a kid. It was awesome.
That's a perfect segue though into Nicolas Cage's new movie, Willy's Wonderland. Have you guys heard about this one?
You mentioned it briefly to me, and I brought up that it sounds similar to Five Nights at Freddy's, which blows me away that you've never even heard about Five Nights at Freddy's.
Yeah, that's never been on my radar ever. I didn't even know what that was until we had our planning call talking about this, and they told me about some game, and I'm like, what is Five Nights at Freddy's? What is this about?
I don't know how you're out of the loop on that. It was so huge for so many years.
Yeah, I missed that one entirely. I had never even heard of it. But this movie, it's Nicolas Cage battling animatronic monsters in an amusement park. That's the plot of the movie.
I like it.
Already I'm in. I guess he's the janitor. And
so it's exactly Five Nights at Freddy's, basically.
And he's trapped inside an abandoned family entertainment center populated by possessed animatronics.
Hell yeah, I'm about it.
One of the quotes related to it, I see this movie as Pale Rider versus Killer Clowns from Outer Space.
Oh, man. That's another one of my personal favorites. I know it's a bad movie, but Killer Clowns from Outer Space is hilariously awesome.
That's another one I've never seen.
That's one I see on Netflix all the time and I've never watched.
I highly recommend it. It's goofy and it's not super scary, but I don't know. It's just a fun watch.
Is it spoopy, Brandon?
It's definitely spoopy.
Trent, do you know that word, spoopy?
No.
Spoopy.
Are you aware of the hip lingo on the internet, spoopy?
Hello, my name is Spoopy.
I don't care to know anymore. Next.
Anyways.
Wait, no, what does it mean?
It's scary and funny at the same time.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I did not know this word until we looked it up for some horror movie we watched. I don't remember which one. Okay, so Microsoft is closing all physical retail stores. And I feel like most people who hear this news are wondering, why does Microsoft have physical stores?
That was my exact thought, because they're in every retailer ever. Like, why do you need a specific Microsoft store?
I think it's mostly just to have a storefront kind of like Apple. And honestly, if you went through any malls that had an Apple store and a Microsoft store, you probably wouldn't be able to tell the difference between the two, because they were like laid out basically the exact same as well.
I'm happy they're getting rid of them. Why not have like one mega showroom for like a tri-state area that has all of the stuff that they're not even releasing for 2 years or something? Give people a reason to come and look at your products as opposed to just hawking it in every mall. I mean, if you're buying Microsoft products, you're either going to probably a third-party distributor or you're just going to buy it online.
Yeah, I think everyone's buying stuff online nowadays anyways. So I see why storefronts are closing.
For sure. Well, RIP Microsoft storefronts. Brandon, you have some news for us, and I'm actually really excited about this. Why don't you hit us with it?
Yeah, so they announced that they're going to be making a Cuphead show for Netflix, which is very exciting. It's going to be set in the world of the game, released in 2017.
Tell them about what the game's about, just like a general idea of it.
So the game is a boss rushing game for the most part, and there's also some run and gun levels, and it's very dependent on movement, and it's one of those games where you have to learn how bosses fight and react to certain things. so that you can learn the fight and then you can perfect it. So it's definitely one of those games that it can be hair pulling, super frustrating at times, but it's very rewarding. And it's also based on cartoons from around like the 40s. So the art style is absolutely incredible. It looks like the animated show is not going to use the exact same art style. It's going to be a little bit more modernized, but it's still going to have that feel of the game.
I would describe Cuphead's animation style similar to old-timey Disney.
Yeah, exactly.
The very original Disney cartoons where they're super bouncy and everything. It's similar to that, and it's kind of like it's a
like 2D. Steamboat Willie style.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's okay, a 2D cool. side scroller kind of arcade game. You can play co-op as well.
I would play that. That sounds cool.
Yeah, you can get it on the Switch and the Xbox. And is it on the PlayStation?
I don't think it's on the PlayStation. I think it's just on the Xbox and Switch currently. It might be on PC as well, but don't quote me on that one.
That one's definitely right up your alley, though. It's more of a like arcade style game, but it's very, very difficult. And all of the animation is hand-drawn, which is super cool.
So they've announced that there's going to be 11 episodes that are going to be at 10 minutes each for it. They don't have an official date when it's going to be coming out, but they did say expect it soon. So I would speculate probably within the year 2020, but there's no actual date that they've announced. Also, a cool little side note, the voice actor that's going to be playing Mugman, his name is Frank Todaro, and he's voiced Starscream in a number of the Transformers series.
Is Starscream the airplane?
Yes, he is.
Yeah, he's like, the fighter.
Megatron's right-hand man.
Ooh, I love to hate him.
Exactly. Yeah, he's like the sniveling little just teacher's pet type bitch character.
You know what he was really good in? Is Beast Wars. They're like spinoff where instead of turning into like cars and airplanes and stuff, they turned into like these mechanical beasts. I think this came out in like the 90s or something. It may have even been the 80s. But I remember watching that before going to school every day, and I really liked Starscream in that show because like he was kind of the anti-hero. He would switch back and forth between helping Megatron and then switching to the good side, mainly just to screw over Megatron so that he could gain power. Kind of like a Vegeta character from Dragon Ball.
The perfect right-hand man for a bad guy.
And I've always liked Vegeta, so Starscream's cool.
I also remember watching Transformers before I would go to school in the morning.
Hell yeah. I woke up too late to be watching cartoons. I was like throwing clothes
that does
on.
Does not surprise me one bit.
Story of my life.
Knowing you, that is not a surprise.
Yeah, really. I run on my own timeline called Melvin Time for those of you.
Krelvin Time.
Yeah. They've also released some gameplay and a new trailer for Cyberpunk 2077, the new game that's going to be coming out by CD Projekt Red, the developers of the Witcher series. The game is going to be dropped in November. It was actually originally supposed to be in September, but you know, things happen in the world. I don't know if you've heard about
coronavirus.
It. So they had to push it back a little bit, but it's going to be an open world action RPG set in a sprawling megalopolis. And honestly, like looking at some gameplay, it really gives me strong vibes of like GTA mixed with like a Blade Runner setting.
Yes, absolutely. 100% agree. However, emphasis on RPG.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Because I have been seeing some stuff online from some of the developers and they're like, do not forget this game is an RPG. So yep,
you can like customize certain implants on your character and stuff to change fighting situations, and I'm sure there's plenty of other things that you can do.
I'm wondering if it's going to be choice based. Are you going to be a good guy / bad guy?
I think it's supposed to be. I'm pretty sure that the actions that you take in the game are supposed to reflect in what happens later in the game as well.
I love games like that. That Infamous game on the PlayStation by Sucker Punch was so good. I want a Star Wars game like that. I really want a Star Wars game that I can choose to go to the dark side and then I can replay and then I can be the boring good Jedi after that.
So during the gameplay reveal, they showed some of the third person driving through both the main area that the story is going to be taking place in, which is called Night City. And you can also see yourself driving through a desert town that's currently doesn't have a name, at least that I know of. They showed off some first person melee combat. They show you walking through a few futuristic clubs and talking to some higher ups in the underground world. And there's also some first-person shooting that they showed off as well. One of which was actually in a car chase, which looks really cool. Oh, and one more thing. I put this in my notes because I wanted to try this drink. While in one of the clubs, one of the characters orders a drink that's a tequila old-fashioned with a splash of cerveza and a chili garnish called a Johnny Silverhands. And that's something I definitely want to try for one of these episodes.
What makes it the old-fashioned? I wonder if they put some bitters in there.
I guess it's the bitters and sugar, but they're just using tequila in place of the bourbon, which is kind of interesting. Actually, maybe instead of the sugar, they're adding the splash of cerveza, the beer. I don't know.
Y'all are on such a different wavelength in terms of what you're drinking. Like, that sounds horrible to me.
I don't know. Just the way that he
was. I didn't think it necessarily.
Like, it could be good.
I didn't think it necessarily sounded appetizing, but I am a person that if I get like a Don Julio Blanco or like a special edition of it or something like that, I'll drink that on the rocks with just a lime and a splash of water. I can do really nice tequila like that, but
never go with the cheap tequila. It always.
Yeah. Ugh. Oh, Chris, remember the Cuesta Mesta?
Oh my God. Don't ever.
Yes, this is the bottom shelf, the most bottom shelf plastic tequila. Thankfully, it was at least silver tequila. It wasn't gold. But Chris's freshman year of college, my sophomore year of college, when we were pledging our fraternity, we probably had that bottle for like, 3 months? Because none of us could finish it.
My cousin was 21 and I lived with him my freshman year. So he went to buy alcohol and he didn't drink a lot. And I gave him money and told him to get Jose Cuervo. And he comes out with this bottom shelf, God knows what, called Cuesta Mesa. And he tells me that the employee said it was better and cheaper. And we like took one shot of it and it was like, oh my God, what is this? And it sat like in a college apartment with a lot of guys hanging out. Sat there for months, did not get killed.
instant tears to your eyes. Like, it is bad.
We used it as a punishment shot. Like, if you did something stupid in my house, it was like, all right, bring out the Cuesta.
I like that.
So
alongside the Cyberpunk gameplay reveal, they also announced that there's going to be a Cyberpunk 2077 anime.
Yes.
Netflix. So you're getting two animated shows right now in one episode. That's kind of interesting.
I'm all about some more mainstream anime. Like, the more obscure stuff I'm not really into, with the exception of One Punch Man. But like that, I'll definitely give that a shot.
There are some big hitters that are going to be working on this anime. It looks incredible from what I've seen so far. So it's going to be produced by Studio Trigger, which is composed of some of the members from the legendary studio Gainax. And Studio Trigger is responsible for some of the animes like Kill la Kill and Darling in the Franxx, both which are huge in the anime community. Gainax produced Neon Genesis Evangelion and Gurren Lagann, which are also mainstays, top tier animes, in my opinion.
Yeah, I don't watch Neon Genesis Evangelion or Jellion?
Gellion.
So I don't watch that, but I do know I've seen it because it is iconic. It's like the gigantic robots, right?
Mm-hmm. Gurren Lagann also is another giant robot thing, but that one also, it takes a little spin off of it, kind of.
Can I cut in for a second and just say that, like, Cyberpunk as a whole right now is one of the games I'm most excited for coming out this year.
Oh, it is the most exciting game for me, at least this year, that I think is going to be coming out.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to finish. I'll have finished The Last of Us 2. By the way, check out our Last of Us episode from last week. And I'll be done with that soon. And I'm excited to see how that stacks up against Cyberpunk.
Yeah, for sure.
Because that game looks
amazing. It's not going to be better than Crash Bandicoot.
Oh, my God.
I'll tell you that much.
That might be true.
Like, I'm just going to go back and beat Jack and Daxter from the PlayStation 2 one more time instead of getting that game.
Okay, quit hating on Jack and Daxter. That's strike two. That's strike two, bro.
You've crossed the line.
You don't get three.
Oh, man.
So it's going to be a standalone story based in the world of Cyberpunk 2077, and it's set to premiere sometime in 2022. And another little interesting thing is the original score for it is going to be composed by Akira Yamaoka, who composed a lot of the scores found in Silent Hill.
Ooh.
that's all I've got. So there's a lot of heavy hitters that are working on this project, and I think it's going to turn out amazing.
And you said it's on Netflix.
It is going to be on Netflix, but not till 2022. So you got a little while to go.
Well, that gives it time for everyone to beat the game, for it to be known as a really big game and be amazing, similar to The Witcher, and then it'll drop, and it's going to be a cultural phenomenon.
It's time for everyone to fall in love with the series. They might even have some DLC by that point. I mean, who really knows? So,
yeah, that'll be cool.
I'm very excited for that one.
All right, Trent, hit us with what you got. I know you have a really good game that you're going to talk about today, and I'm really excited for this one as well.
Yeah, so we talked about this game a couple episodes back, but Ghost of Tsushima, which is being produced by Sucker Punch, a PlayStation, I think that they exclusively do games for PlayStation. I can't remember anything else they've done outside of PlayStation, but they did the original Sly Cooper games for the PS2. They did the Infamous Saga. They have this Samurai Warrior game coming out July 17th, set in the 13th century. And basically the Mongols have destroyed this island of Tsushima that is home to an ancient samurai culture. And the main protagonist is somebody that has survived, and he's trying to claw back and take back his homeland. But kind of the premise of the game is he can't fight honorably. He can't fight the way that his father had taught him to fight as an honorable samurai. So he has to adapt to the way of the ghost, which I'm assuming is going to be some like super brutal fighting method. It looks really good. You guys have both seen the trailer. It looks awesome. The graphics look amazing. I can't wait for this game to come out.
Incredible.
Yeah, mm-hmm. The graphics are a big selling point. Also, there's a black and white mode where you can actually live out like your old school samurai warrior.
So you can make it like a spaghetti western, but with like,
yes,
samurai. That's awesome. I like that aspect a lot, actually.
Beautiful. I was watching a clip of it and it is unreal. Like, I cannot wait to get my hands on that game just because I know I'm really going to enjoy watching it.
These games that we're talking about that are coming out for the PS4, you guys got to get them and give them a shot, because this is pretty much the last of this generation. This Christmas, that's pretty much it. Everything's going to be moving to the PS5. So this is going to be the best of the PlayStation 4 or the Xbox One for games that are also coming out on Xbox, because they're basically squeezing out every last little piece of power that those systems can provide. So yeah, I'm really excited about that. That's coming out.
I think it'll make for a good swan song for with both Cyberpunk and Ghost of Tsushima.
I mean, yeah, you could have three potentially some of the best games ever made on this 2020 year for PlayStation. Last of Us, Cyberpunk, and Ghost of Tsushima.
Yep.
Next thing I got, Ozark Season 4. Brandon, did you ever watch Ozark?
I have not. It's one of those series that I keep meaning to get into, but I just never get around to.
So Chris and I love that show. The most recent season just dropped this year. Netflix has announced that Season 4 is actually going to be broken up into two parts. So it's going to be 14 episodes. They call it, all the news headlines are calling it a mega season. So I'm not sure if they are going to be longer episodes or not, but I think each season is typically 10 episodes. So we're going to have two parts of a season 4, and they don't have a release date on that yet, but just be on the lookout. Ozark Season 4. Oh, by the way, this is the final season. So Marty and Wendy Bird, this is their last stand.
And if you saw the end of the third season, then you will know that there's some crazy shit about to pop off.
Normally we say spoiler alert, but because our other co-host Brandon hasn't watched it, and we know he eventually will because it's so good, we will not spoil happens in season 3. What do you guys think about this Pirates of the Caribbean announcement? So we've got two parts. Okay.
That was not an R. That was an not an arg.
So Disney has announced they've got two Pirates of the Caribbean movies in the works right now. So one is meant to be a direct reboot of the original franchise. So from Curse of the Black Pearl all the way to whatever that last shitty movie was. What was it called? Not on Stranger's Tides.
Pirates of the Caribbean, why won't you let this die?
Dead men tell no tales. So they're essentially rebooting that.
Are you talking about World's End? Is it World's End? Is that what it's called?
No, that's the third one.
Yeah, I thought that's what you're
talking there, about.
Oh, Dead Man's Chest?
No, so it's Curse of the Black Pearl, Dead Man's Chest, At World's End, On Stranger Tides.
Oh, you're talking about the bad ones. Okay.
Well, you could argue that they all get worse after Black Pearl, but at least the original trilogy was, I think it was still entertaining.
It was serviceable. Yeah. I like the original trilogy.
We all agree, by the way, that the fourth and fifth movie are unforgivable.
Those aren't canon as far as I'm concerned.
Oh, yeah, I agree. Especially with Captain Barbossa. Just completely.
Oh, my God. Why would you give him a daughter out of nowhere? That makes no sense for his character.
That makes no sense. And then on Stranger's Tides, the movie starts off with him being basically a simp for the British Navy.
Yeah.
Why do they keep reusing dead men in their titles at this point?
That's what I was thinking, too. Yeah.
Because of the whole the ride, Dead Men Tell No Tales.
Yeah, you had one shot to do that and you missed it. You did Dead Man's Chest, so.
Yeah, they did it good that time.
Those sequels were completely saved by, well, obviously Jack Sparrow, but Davy Jones. He was the best part about two movies. Yeah,
I will say, for the new Pirates that are going to be coming out, I think Margot Robbie is going to do a good job. But it's not going to be a Pirates movie without Captain Jack.
So you kind of jumped ahead of us. So they're doing a reboot of the original series. Rumors are that Jack Sparrow will either make an appearance or be in it. We're not entirely sure yet. And then they have a separate movie that is a spinoff that's not going to be related to the reboot at all, starring Margot Robbie, written and directed by the Birds of Prey director, which I unfortunately forget her name. I should know that.
Meh.
So Margot Robbie's a really good actress.
Yeah, she is. I think she would fit the role of a pirate really well, too. I mean, she can pretty much take any role and run with it, I'm sure. But I raise concerns that, I mean, Johnny Depp made the series what it is, in my opinion. And without it, it's going to be sorely lacking.
Here's my opinion. I think that they were going to continue with the series anyway because it's a cash cow. I think this is the best way. I don't necessarily think that having two separate movies in development that aren't related to each other is the best move forward, but I think some kind of reboot is the best move forward.
Totally. Unless, agree.
Because totally. the way they were doing it, it was just killing. It was just,
oh God,
literally beating a dead horse.
We were just talking about how bad the last three outside of the main, what we even consider canon, was. Like, why you have to reboot it at that point. If the general consensus is everything you're making is horrible outside of the first three, you should decommit them from canon.
I agree. Right. But I think that wasn't based on necessarily Johnny Depp or Jack Sparrow. It was the story writing. It just wasn't that.
Oh, good. No, it was not.
Totally agree with that.
Not based off of him. And the way that they write him, he almost becomes, in those two movies, he just is not, I don't know. There's something different about it. He's still Jack Sparrow, but the character is just, there's no real drive behind him.
There's not substance. It's just him being on screen, being quirky, as opposed to him being like pivotal to the entire story and being
a
character within the construct of the story, as opposed to outside of it.
You hit the nail on the head. Couldn't have said it better. But that's the news for that. So they've got two movies in development. No word on when they're going to be released. Jerry Bruckheimer is apparently still at the helm of the reboot, so he did all the original Pirates movies. But that's what I got for Pirates.
I like me some Jerry Bruckheimer. I do want to say that.
That kind of goes into my my Team America stuff with Jerry Bruckheimer, actually. But we'll get to that.
Next piece of news. Batflex back. All right.
Yeah,
I like
Batflex.
Yes. Two thumbs up for Batfleck. Yeah. Horrible. I don't know if it's editing, the having to do rewrites a bunch of times, but he got dealt a bad hand. But I thought he was in particular a good Bruce Wayne. Actually, this is rumor corner. It's not officially announced yet, but it's being considered news, is that he signed a new contract with Warner Brothers and he's going to be doing more movies in the Zack Snyder Justice League universe, including more Justice League movies and potentially a separate Batman film. So what this means is, combine that with the news of Michael Keaton reprising his role in a new Flash movie that is in the DCEU. What that's telling me is they're definitely going to be exploring the multiverse. And I think it's called the Crisis of Earths, that timeline in the comics. Are you guys familiar with that? Crisis on Infinite Earths.
Yeah.
Is what it's called.
Is that related to the Flashpoint paradox at all?
I'm not sure. We should get a guest on here that's a super comic book nerd, because I'm not huge into comic books. I love the comic book superheroes, but I haven't read a lot of the graphic novels or the comics.
Mm-hmm. That's a good idea. Shout out. If anybody's super big on comic books, hit us up. Let us know.
And then it'd be interesting to see if, I know that they've said that the Robert Pattinson Batman film is not going to be in the DCEU, but can you imagine we get three different Batman? You got the young Robert Pattinson, you've got the established Batfleck, and then you've got the kind of older,
grizzled
Keaton. Yeah, Keaton.
I personally would love that. That's all I'm going to say about it. I think that it just gives so many options to Batman. They're basically like, okay, we're just going to load this up and keep firing Batman until one sticks, which I'm okay with at this point.
Yeah, they just throw a bunch of shit at the wall. They're like, okay, Warner Brothers, all we're making in the next 3 years are DCEU movies. And whichever ones are received the best, that's the direction we're going with the franchise. Sounds smart, right?
I agree. I like
it. I couldn't agree more.
Can't be worse than what's happening right now. Let's go.
I was about to say, like, it can't be worse than what they've done.
I hope not.
Yeah, I shouldn't say that. I'll jinx it. Apparently,
you never know.
What if the only movies that end up being released in the future are Batman movies?
I'd be okay.
I don't know how I'd feel about that.
Welcome. Anyways,
I think I'd be okay with it for a little bit, and I'd get really bored of it.
All right, so Trent, you have one more quick piece of information. There's not a ton of info on it, but hit us with it.
You talking about the Harry Potter open world game?
Yes, sir, I am.
I don't really know much about it. They announced it. I don't even know if there's a trailer out. I told you guys when we talked about this, I'm super excited for that because I'm probably the biggest Harry Potter. God, Harry Potty. I've had four or five of these Basil Haydens now. I'm probably the biggest Harry Potter nerd that you know. And I played a Harry Potter game back when the Deathly Hallows Part 2 was coming out. It was kind of like a Uncharted style game where you hide behind things in a third person shooter and your wand is like an AK-47. So that's actually a weird concept.
Fire!
Actually, you know what? I played that on the PlayStation Move, I think it was called. It was kind of like Wii Nunchucks. So, and the little orb on the top of it would turn different colors depending on what spell you did.
Oh, yeah. I remember those weird little nunchuck things.
It was gimmicky, but it was kind of fun. But being a Harry Potter nerd, I don't know if this is going to be good or not, but I'm excited about it.
Fair enough. You'll have to tell us how it is when it comes out, because that's not one of the ones I'll be going to first. That's for sure.
It's on the PlayStation and the Xbox, PlayStation 5 and the Xbox Series X. So it'll be next gen. It'll be interesting to see.
Yeah, if nothing else, it should have good graphics.
Wait till it gets a 95 from IGN, then you're going to play Brandon.
Then I might play it.
Color me surprised.
Yeah.
All right, so let's go ahead and jump into this. For those of you listening, we are about to hit into our marathon conversation.
America.
USA.
America. USA.
This is America. Don't catch a stripper, no. Okay, anyways, so let's go ahead. Trent, why don't you start us off? Hit us with why Independence Day is so important to America, why it's quintessential, why you love it. Give us the rundown.
Okay, so when Chris asked me, we were going to do this a marathon, he asked me my most quintessential America movie. I immediately thought Independence Day, mostly because I watch it every single 4th of July. I have not missed it. I can't remember the last time I missed watching that. Me and my best friend Carlos, especially when we lived together, we would watch this every single year on the 4th of July. This is what you would consider a classic summer blockbuster, 1996. It was huge buzz, and it was at the time the second highest grossing film of all time. You guys want to take a guess?
Really?
Yeah, you want to take a guess at what the first one was before that?
Jurassic Park.
It was. Wow.
Oh,
good job. Nice. Yeah.
Yes, sir. I love Jurassic Park.
Jurassic Park is amazing. And we talked about this last week. I think, Chris, you did touch on this last week. It's the number one in the box office right now because
of drive-ins. With drive-in theaters.
Yes. That's right. It's so dumb that Florida doesn't have drive-ins, but we can't really have them because we have hurricanes, and that would absolutely wreck a drive-in. I mean, have you seen Twister?
They're doing like a reboot of Twister, by the way. Did you hear that?
I am terrified of tornadoes because my family lost their house during Hurricane Charlie.
Great. Yeah.
To a tree from a small tornado. And so I am terrified of them. I will totally see that movie, but that scares the shit out of me.
Well, we're all horror fans. We all kind of understand that.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Roller coasters, that kind of thing. But please continue about an Independence Day. Speaking of a horror story.
So, what?
It's got some horror elements.
Okay. Dude, if aliens came and bombed the White House, that is totally a freaking...
I misunderstood you. I thought you were talking about like a horror of in terms of just a bad movie.
Oh, no.
Because we were talking shit about Independence Day Resurgence or whatever it's called. That shitty...
Yeah, that's a horror story follow-up. In a different way for sure.
Yeah. Another reason, quintessential America movie. In the 90s, you get a film with Bill Pullman, Jeff Goldblum, and Will Smith. I mean, that is America in the 90s right there.
That is true. I will give you that.
I was about to say, tell me I'm wrong.
Will Smith was America's darling in the 90s.
Funny enough.
He probably still is at this point.
This was his first film. Oh, man, I should have looked this up. I don't know if this is before Men in Black or not. I think this was actually his first film after Fresh Prince. I'm going to stand firm on that. I'm pretty sure this is his first film after Fresh Prince, which is kind of surprising because he just is completely different than in the Fresh Prince. And it doesn't seem like his acting there could have jumped to Independence Day. You know what I mean? Like Independence Day, it felt like that dude's a star and he's an established star, but he really wasn't. It was so long ago.
It did feel like that, but I'll say this, towards the end of Fresh Prince, he started bringing a whole nother level of acting to that show, and it started getting very emotionally deep, and I felt like that was kind of when his career hit its stride, was end of that into Independence Day, and then his career from that point on.
Yeah. So another little tidbit why I think this is the best America film ever. I think it's got one of the best speeches ever, which is delivered by the president, which is played by Bill Pullman, at basically the pinnacle of the fight against the aliens. And by the way, I'm not going to give a synopsis of this movie. If you guys haven't seen this by now, then what's wrong with you? Go watch it.
You're tripping. It's literally on our a marathon movie playlist. Like it's like movies that we assume the majority of Americans have probably seen.
So he basically says this is because they finished the assault on the mothership on the 4th of July. And essentially what he says is the 4th of July will no longer be known as American Independence Day, but the Independence Day of mankind, something to that effect. It is badass. I actually have on my personal Instagram a video of me watching that on the 4th of July, specifically of that speech. It is so bad.
All the way through it, because you should have been.
I was on the couch. And I was drinking a Bush Light.
Hell yeah, brother.
America. Bill Pullman's speech, amazing. The fact that they're lighting up cigars at the end of the film, just that little fat lady joke that Will Smith and Jeff Goldblum have. They have their little cigars. And Will Smith's just like, yeah, we don't smoke these until the fat lady sings. They have kind of a back and forth on that. I love that part. A couple of little fun facts about it. I was just reading today. Apparently, the military was actually supporting this film until they realized all of the Area 51 stuff was in there. And they told Roland Emmerich to take it out. And he said, fuck you. this is my movie. I'm not doing that. And they withdrew their support of the film. So that,
oh, wow.
I mean, that's confirmation, right? Like aliens are in Area 51.
I'd say so. I'd like to believe.
So that, I mean, just thought that was an interesting tidbit. Here's my take on it. Why would the military wouldn't want to support a movie saying that Area 51 is real, just in general, whether it's real or not?
Well, Area 51 is real. It's just,
well, that's, yes,
fact, but what's inside of it.
Exactly. I'm sorry, I misspoke. But yes, that's basically what I'm saying, is they wouldn't want to confirm or deny, right? That's governmental policy. So as long as it doesn't have to do with Area 51, it's all good.
See, we all could have found that out last year, but everyone got distracted by a music festival. They should have got in there and clapped those alien cheeks.
I know. I missed that.
The Naruto runners were going to be the front cavalry.
I know. They got too busy dancing in the mosh pit.
Oh, man.
Another little fun fact. One of the last films to use, I say minimal CGI. There was a lot of CGI, but a lot of, like, in particular, the scene where the White House is destroyed by one of those disc ships is all miniature, actual, like, model construction. So that's kind of cool. Again, this is in 1996, so they were still doing a lot of practical effects. And then we kind of got into the years where CGI was available, but it still looks really bad, a la X-Men, the first X-Men movie.
Yikes.
Yeah. By the way, the speech that we were talking about from Bill Pullman, it was actually filmed on August 6th, 1995, which was 50 years after the U.S. dropped atomic bombs on Japan. So,
America. Little fun fact right there. It's symbolic for sure.
So, yeah, this movie, I mean, at the core, it's a great alien movie, but it's about America combining their forces with the rest of the world to fight off a foreign enemy. And that's kind of like a good thing to think about right now with everything that's going around culturally and just in the world in general, that if push came to shove, I like to think that we could combine forces with everybody and fight off some aliens.
Bring
I feel
on
like that's
the
like
some
Watchmen stuff.
Bring on the aliens, bring on the zombies, whatever it is.
You bring in that extraterrestrial threat, so the whole world has to come together to take care of it.
Mm-hmm.
Probably,
but yeah, I mean,
aliens over zombies, right?
Yeah.
Zombies, we'd all be separated.
Yeah.
For sure.
I mean, you see people that are surviving react to other people they find in a zombie invasion in all sorts of different media. It usually doesn't end that well.
Time to feast upon their bones. Sorry, that was messed
you're
up.
Telling me playing The Last of Us. I know that. Last little thing, all the aliens in the film are covered in KY jelly.
Nice.
Extra lubricated. That is hilarious. Why, is there a reason for that, or just because they'd shine or something?
No, yeah, just because practical effects, like that was the best thing they could find.
Fair enough.
All right, Brandon, why don't you tell us about your film?
You want to hear a little bit about Team America, World Police?
I really do. I really do. By the way, I want to say before we move on, I love Independence Day. In particular, I love Will Smith in Independence Day. So
yeah, he's definitely great in it for sure. So Team America, obviously created by Trey Parker and Matt Stone, the two guys that are behind South Park. They made a film completely out of puppets, which are supposed to be representing an American task force that's like the unofficial global police that go in and stop all sorts of different terrorist acts across the world with no regard for the safety of the people that they're trying to protect.
I bet my mic or the just cracking up while you're explaining this, dude.
Or the beautiful structures such as the Eiffel Tower in Paris, France, which just happens to get hit by a rocket because one of the one of the world officers is like, he shoots it at some terrorist and misses, like, oh shit, I missed. Just brush it off completely. So it's complete satire. It was inspired by the 1960s puppet show Thunderbirds. And I guess originally it was supposed to be planned to be a direct parody of The Day After Tomorrow, because that came out, like, the script for that came out, like, right before. But Trey and Matt were told that there would be most likely be some legal ramifications if they decided to go that route. So they wanted to do something different.
Don't be fucking with Dennis Quaid. Dude,
I honestly have not. I've muted my mic multiple times. I have not stopped laughing since you started giving this, like, the rundown of this movie, man. So just to be clear, they were going to make a puppet movie that was a parody of A Day After Tomorrow, the global climate disaster movie.
Mm-hmm. They were. But they decided to go a different way with that. So it came out in 2004. Right after America decided to mobilize troops to go into Iraq and stuff. And it was, I mean, this is all post 9/11. So it satirizes the patriotism that a lot of Americans were feeling at that time. And, like, it goes way over the top. The tone is meant to be similar to, like I was saying, to Jerry Bruckheimer films, such as, like, Con Air, Bad Boys, Armageddon, and Top Gun. So it kind of has that going on with it, where, like, a lot of the characters act way over the top in certain situations. I'm just going to read you some of the little interesting facts I learned about it. So I don't know if you've seen the movie, both of you guys, but I'm sure you know the whole Matt Damon thing. We're like,
Matt Damon. I do.
They had him for... So they portrayed him as an idiot in the film because the puppet that they created specifically for him to be in the Film Actors Guild looked nothing like him. So, like, all right, well, we'll just make him, like, an idiot throughout the entire film. Some more interesting things. They worked on it for 14 hours a day from May through September while filming. And they only took one day off, and it was the 4th of July because they are patriotic. God damn it.
Yes. Fuck yeah. That's such a great piece of information.
I love that.
They've also quoted that they will never, make another puppet film because it was such a pain in the ass to do.
I honestly love this movie. I've only seen, like, half of it. I was telling Brandon prior to this, I didn't get a chance to watch it because I was really busy with work this week, but I'm going to.
Chris, this is right up your alley.
I'm for sure going to watch it this weekend. I know it's on HBO Max, and I've seen parts of it, and it is, the parts I've seen are hilarious.
You'll laugh your ass off. I'm just gonna highlight some of the funniest moments from the movie now as well.
Wait, Brandon, where did you watch this? Is this on Netflix right now?
No, it's on HBO Max.
Okay, cool. I'll probably watch that on the 4th, actually.
So some of the funniest moments, in my opinion, are when they're rampaging through Paris, France. And when they're rampaging through Cairo, Egypt as well, they're just blowing up buildings and stuff indiscriminately because they're doing the right thing, trying to stop terrorists. But they knock over the Eiffel Tower. They destroy some pyramids in Cairo. They destroy one of the Sphinxes. It's just all collateral damage to what they're doing. Another thing is the music. I'm sure you guys have heard some of the songs that come out of, like, South Park. It's the exact same type of thing where it just parodies some of the overly patriotic songs that were coming out in America post 9/11. There's a song in there called Everyone Has AIDS, which is a parody of some of the songs from Rent. Let's see.
I was just going to mention one South Park song that came to mind when you said that was Kyle's Mom's a Bitch.
Yeah. Same kind of tone for all the songs in the movie.
Epic
and it's,
song.
Of course, it's Trey Parker singing all of them in his glorious voice. Some of the funniest moments is the ridiculous stereotypes that they have throughout the movie. Like, they have the Middle Eastern terrorists always saying, like, Dorka Dorka Muhammad Jihad. And they have the French streets in Paris are paved with croissants. And some of the buildings in North Korea are Chinese takeout boxes.
Oh my god, dude. What? Okay.
And so one of the major plot points is they bring a new character in because they need someone to get in as a spy to spy on the terrorists. So like, we're going to do some super, I don't know. They're going to make it so that he fits in. So they need to do like some facial reconstruction on him. And basically what they do is they just paint him in brown face and throw some pubic hairs on his face. So
he's no,
it's so bad, but it's hilarious.
I mean, I'd expect nothing less from Trey Parker and Matt.
Exactly. South Park's creator.
It's par for the course, honestly.
Yeah, that is what I'm expecting. That's exactly as offensive as I would expect it to be. But holy shit, that movie definitely cannot be released this year.
No, my God, no, it could not. But yeah, it's hilarious. I highly recommend it. It's a perfect movie to watch on 4th of July.
when you mentioned the Durka Durka Muhammad Jihad, I literally spit on my mic laughing. I'd forgotten about that.
Okay, just to be clear, that ridiculous. Like, this is again separation of art from life.
Oh, absolutely.
just so everyone out there's listening, we think that's funny because of how absurd the whole movie is.
Yeah, it's a parody. It's completely parody.
Yeah. And I personally, one of the scenes I have seen is the gigantic puppet orgy, which is hilarious.
They actually had, so they made it super raunchy originally for the puppet sex, because they wanted the people that censor movies to focus on that in particular and kind of forget about everything else in the movie. So they focused on just editing that part down to get it into the R rating, because it was rated X for a long time, actually.
Oh my God. I can't imagine a more graphic puppet orgy than what I saw already. And I don't ever want to see the director's cut on that.
Apparently there is an uncensored version out there somewhere, but I haven't seen that one.
We'll let that one lie.
I need to find that. I need to see some puppets.
This is what I was looking for.
So let's take it in a little bit more serious direction. Okay, yeah, Chris, you want to talk about Saving Private Ryan a little bit?
Yeah, let's take a big step back from the hilariousness of what I just listened to. I can't speak for y'all listeners out there, but oh my God, I was actually dying as he's describing this, because like I said, I haven't seen the whole movie, but I want to very badly. It sounds hilarious. So the movie that I'm going to be talking about is Saving Private Ryan. I would imagine most people have probably seen this movie. If you have not, you need to pause this podcast and go turn it on right now.
If you haven't seen it, you hate our veterans.
True.
That's what I'm going to say. I'm going to stand by that.
I don't know if I'll go that far, but you should totally, totally see this movie. It really is an amazing film. First off, stars Tom Hanks, one of, in my opinion, the quintessential American actors of our time. He and Morgan Freeman and Denzel Washington, and I would say Tom Cruise if he's not a psycho, maybe. Yeah.
Time out. I'm just gonna get on the soapbox for 2 seconds. Because Tom Cruise is actually psycho in real life, it makes him the best actor in the entire world.
All right, fair enough. I'll give you that one.
All right, thank you.
Yeah, that's fair. I really do like Tom Cruise's acting, even though I totally disagree with his belief system. But again, separating the art from the artist is important. It's very important to be able to enjoy culture. So beyond that, Saving Private Ryan. So this movie is about... So one of the quintessential scenes, in my opinion, is literally the boats opening up, the amphibious landing craft for the United States Army. Well, I guess it was the Navy dispatching soldiers. But that landing scene where they come onto the beach, holy shit. That scene is by far one of the most powerful film scenes I've ever watched.
Even if you haven't seen the movie, I can guarantee you've seen that scene parodied multiple times through different sources of media. It's so iconic.
It is. And it's hard to watch, too, knowing
it is.
There were Americans that, like, that was the experience. What you saw there was raw. And there's people, you know, younger than us, my sister's age, that was on that beach that day. So it is truly an amazing piece of art that just, what is it? The first 15 minutes of the film.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is. Wow. Honestly, that entire scene is, I would say, one of the best scenes in film history, period. Just everything that goes into it. At one point, Tom Hanks is shell-shocked. Holy shit. Like,
dude, watching the guy like pick up his arm and like walk away with it, like all like delirious and confused, is like, it's terrifying, honestly, just watching it. It's hard to watch.
Yeah.
But it's powerful, though.
It really is. Personally, for me, part of the reason why this is quintessential America, my great uncle and my grandfather were involved in the beach landings on Normandy, Utah. So for me, it's like, holy shit. I don't even know like what to say after watching it. Mm-hmm. But some interesting facts. So Steven Spielberg directed it, and part of the reason why it's so incredible is it's Tom Hanks, Steven Spielberg combo. So good, period. And they had never worked together before this movie. They went on to work together in Catch Me If You Can, The Terminal, Bridge of Spies, as well as the miniseries Band of Brothers and The Pacific, which...
Catch Me If You Can was so good.
I was about to say, I love Catch Me If You Can.
So here's what I'm going to tell you guys. I've seen everything on this list. Every single one of them is great. There's not one bad recommendation there. Catch Me If You Can, amazing. Terminal, good movie. Not amazing, but a good movie. Bridge of Spies.
That's one of the ones I haven't seen. I haven't seen Terminal.
I have also not seen Terminal.
Bridge of Spies, I would say amazing.
I liked Bridge of Spies a lot. Wish it was rated R.
Agreed. It should have been. But also Band of Brothers, all incredible. I would say it's on par with Saving Private Ryan, but Saving Private Ryan's a movie. Oscar winning, 75th anniversary of D-Day was last year, June 4th. So we were on 76 last month, actually. And It's one of those movies that just makes you think, you know, there were so many people who went and straight up died so that you could live the life that you live today. And it's just good.
Yeah, going halfway across the world to do it too. Yeah,
and it's good to just...
And live the life that you could live, not necessarily even just for Americans, but for...
All people.
People in Europe.
All people in the world. Like, everyone. So, it really is one of those cornerstone moments. In my opinion, it's a description of a quintessential moment in history across the world that changed everything forever. And part of that was it changed American culture by when we sent soldiers over, it was a huge mixing pot because you had thousands and thousands of, I mean, hundreds of thousands, I would imagine. I don't know exact numbers, but all these people coming from different places and interacting, you know, you had farmer boys from Idaho and you had people from the inner city of New York City and like Brooklyn and people from Florida, I'm sure. And so that kind of cultural mixing pot actually ended up helping the fabric of our country moving forward. So I think part of this appeal to this movie, in my opinion, is related to the overall idea of all of that. And it just, every time I watch this movie, I love it. There's never a time you could put this film on and I'm not going to watch it all the way through and enjoy it. It has, what is his name?
So did what? Matt Damon.
Yeah, Matt Damon. I wanted to call him
Matt Damon. Yes. Sorry.
Wait, two of the movies we're talking about. We didn't even.
Oh man!
Way to change the tone.
It was getting a little somber for me. I had to spice it up a bit.
No, let's keep it light. Let's keep it light. So yeah, Matt Damon. So the story, if you haven't seen it, is about Tom Hanks going out and he goes onto the beach at Normandy and then eventually has to track down Matt Damon, Private Ryan, throughout the war front in Europe because his brothers were all killed on D-Day. Every single one of them came from a family of five brothers.
There's like a horrible scene in the beginning where they find a Private Ryan. It's not Matt Damon. It's not the one they're looking for. And they tell him that all of his, you know, his brothers have died. And he's like, how? My brother's in grade school. And he's just like bawling. And it's gut wrenching to watch. And then you're like, you realize, oh, this is the wrong guy. That's not who they're talking about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a hard one to watch, honestly. Can you imagine?
It is, but it's one of those films where like you sit down to watch it and you're just glued to it. You can't, it's not one of those films you can just stop and walk away from.
Oh, absolutely. Oh, yeah. Not. And I want to ask you guys this. I don't want to get too deep into this movie, but can you imagine having somebody, you're deployed to a war zone to go fight against fascism because there's an evil motherfucker taking over the world, and you have to go across the ocean to a place that most people at that time had never been to, period. And you have to go fight for other people's liberation because of how fucking evil this fascist empire is. And then after surviving all that shit, you have somebody come to you and tell you that your grade school brother has been killed and it's a fucking misunderstanding. That would be horrible. That would be so bad.
The mental struggles and anxiety that you have to go through just being over there has got to be absolutely just exhausting. And no, I could imagine it. Like,
yeah, I can't even begin to imagine
it. I have such a close relationship to my brothers and my sister.
Yeah.
If I got that news, I would be completely devastated.
We all come,
and then
listeners, we all come from families that are relatable to this story because he has three brothers that are all killed in combat. And it's based on the story, that they describe, at least the story of the Sullivan brothers, where five of them were killed in combat. And it instituted a policy of where the government goes and gets people out if all your siblings are killed so that a mother doesn't have to have her entire family die fighting a war. Mm-hmm.
That's so tragic that has to be a thing.
Yeah, it's horrible. So let's kind of move on from that though. You know, that I do want to say that this story is a beautiful story because it starts out actually with Private Ryan, who they go to save, coming to the beach in Normandy to the grave sites and paying tribute to, you know, those who gave their lives so that he could be alive to that day. And he's got a huge, beautiful family. And, you know, I think that was powerful in its own way as well.
That's a great pick, Chris. Yeah. I think it's funny that we didn't plan this in the beginning, but we almost literally picked the three perfect categories of film. Like Brandon picked a kind of off the wall comedy that portrays in a facetious and satiric way the best and worst parts of about American patriotism.
Mm-hmm.
I picked the quintessential blockbuster popcorn flick with the biggest stars you could possibly have. Not a ton of substance there, but it's still amazing in its own right. And then Chris picks one of the best parts of our culture is an Oscar-winning film that is literally about one of the darkest points in our history. Like that was just so perfect the way we did that.
Yeah, I'm very happy with our marathon having pretty much rounded out this episode. Last thing I'll say, did you guys know that Matt Damon landed the part of Private Ryan because of Robin Williams introducing him to Steven Spielberg?
No, but that's very cool.
Did he do that after they did Good Will Hunting together?
Yes.
I'm guessing that's what happened.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that makes sense.
He introduced him during...
Did Robin Williams ever do anything with Spielberg?
Ooh.
I'm not sure, actually.
I really don't know. But
something to look at later.
There were so many good American actors in that movie as well. Like when you go back and watch it, you just see like, I didn't realize the first time I watched it, Vin Diesel's in it.
Yeah, he is.
So
Eli Roth is in it too.
Yes. So a lot of heavy hitters in that film as well. But,
you know, one more little fun tidbit about that. I was reading actually yesterday that Spielberg had basically asked all of the other actors in that film to isolate Matt Damon and try and like dislike him a little bit. Because in the film, they're all going out of their way to save this guy's necks just so he can go home. And they're all kind of a little peeved about it.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, but multiple people die to save this one guy, which is part of the story. Mm-hmm. But if you, like I said, if you have not seen this movie, you will not be disappointed. And honestly, all three of these picks are, I would say, some of the best films from America ever. So I think we did a very good job, guys. Pat on the back for all three of us. America, fuck
firm
yeah.
handshakes all around.
Oh man,
whiskey for my man, beer for my horse.
All right, so you singing transitions us perfectly. Let's go ahead and hit them with our song recommendations for this week, and let's wrap this up. So, music for me, This Is America, Childish Gambino. It's a different kind of American tune. Very timely, very good song, jams, and I would highly recommend watching the video with it as well. Secondarily, I'm going to say Lee Greenwood's Proud to Be an American, because I think both of those represent America in different ways, and I think they're both important, and they mean a lot to me personally.
I'm just going to recommend anything by Toby Keith.
Ayo. Cool. All right. Well, that being said, let's go ahead and wrap this up, guys. Let's get down from this mountaintop. I'm Chris Melvin, your host, with my two best friends here, Trent Sherrod, Brandon Lanis. Thank you guys so much for chit-chatting geek stuff with me again. And thank all of you listeners for sticking with us. Check us out on social media again, at GeekPeakPod. Facebook.com/GeekPeakPodcast. Peace out, everybody.
Cook up some burgers and dogs for the 4th.
Love America.